Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Flores
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, put a log on the fire and gather around the radio. It's the Bob and
this,
Drew.
Is this radio this or your life. Computer? Gather around your device.
Get your it in your device. Phone way later.
Yeah. Reminder, This Life is courtesy of DrDrew.com. Please support this show by clicking through on that Amazon banner for all your shopping needs. Get nothing, pay nothing extra, but we get to stay around as a result. This Life also loves hearing from you. We'll read your questions. We've got a stack of them today. We can't put them on every podcast. We'll try to put those on that are appropriate that we can address. Again, that's at drdrew.com/contact. Send your questions there. And Bob, this episode is courtesy of Aloe House Recovery.
That is my place in Malibu. I know everybody, we're a little critical of Malibu treatment, but there's one that's good, and that's mine. It's called Aloe, and you can look it up online. It's a lot of information everywhere.
On your
website, on my website.
Well, and your participation and endorsement is all I need to know. I trust you, and so that's good enough for me. But, you know, I was doing some I'm preparing for a talk in Georgia I've got to give in a couple of weeks, and I was reading a lot of stuff about how patients use recovery. And I was thinking, you know, a really good recovery program really adapts to the need, meets the patient where they're at.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah. And some people it's managing affect, some people it's needing social connection, social model, some people it's dealing with, trauma issues or learning to be close to other people, and there's a mix with everybody.
Well, I've been watching it the last 7 to 10 years, yeah. There's the millennials and the younger people, and they have their own separate needs and difficulties.
Unique needs, yeah. There's a more social engagement.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
which is really interesting. It's who would have thought?
Yeah, and all you really need is opportunity, inspiration. They stay sober longer just based on community.
Yeah, and I know you and Jason Waller have gone to great lengths to develop that kind of thing. Of course, you know, pass it on. One addict helping another is still fundamental to all of that, and that's the magic of all
that. And here's the interesting thing. Remember back in the day when I and my friends were being treated by you?
I treated your friends.
Most of my friends. Yeah.
Yes.
But the idea was that once one fell, we would all fall. We'd all go over to their house and fall. That's not how these kids are. One falls and they stand and they get the kid back to treatment. It's weird.
So aloerecovery.com. All right. Also, our friends at Bergamet. I'll tell me about Bergamet late in the show. We spent enough time here. Bergamet, by the way, I'm on Bergamet now as well as my statin. And I'm here to tell you me and the patients.
Oh, they said you could be on both?
Yeah, I looked at the research, and there's some added benefit for somebody like me, especially when my weight's up. So I'm into it, and I've recommended for some patients that don't tolerate statins, and they've had really good results. So I'm convinced. I'm a fan.
So you'll be a guinea pig.
It's
perfect.
A supplement. It's not a guinea pig. That's the point. There's tons of research there that substantiates.
I'm going to watch you.
That's fine, but there's plenty of research to substantiate the benefits from this in terms of both insulin resistance and lowering cholesterol and fatty liver. So all areas, they're important for preventing vascular disease and its complications. Now, all right, it's my privilege to welcome Elizabeth Bochner. Elizabeth, I've got a long intro here, so sit tight, okay?
Got it.
She has combined her medical board license as a midwife and acupuncturist and delivered a diverse body of skills in pre- and perinatal psychology. The idea is to passionately educate and inspire women to understand their bodies and birthing experiences. She has a degree in child psychology from Tufts. What was your language at Tufts? They require a language.
Oh, my God. I almost didn't graduate college because of that.
Which there's a lot of Tufts students, I'm sure. What language?
Spanish.
Spanish.
I butcher it all the time.
Well, it's a good part of the country to be somewhat Spanish fluent. Mm-hmm. She is uniquely in tune with full spectrum of family needs around birth and baby planning. And the reason we're doing this is Bob just had a baby. And
you have Sunday.
And we're going to walk through some of the experiences there and the postnatal, perinatal stuff that you were just complaining about before the mics heated up. Let me keep going through Elizabeth's credentials here. She's Los Angeles-based families as a practicing midwife, both at home and an accredited birthing center, Graceful Birthing. She has been passionately dedicated to supporting and inspiring women. She's been on many different television shows, coming up on Love and Hip Hop. That'll be interesting. And she has a natural talent when it comes to writing. Has been contributing to well-known blogs. So, and her she writes articles not only about birthing and perinatal health, but also promoting female empowerment and childbirth tips, and normalizing all choices for the childbirth experience. So empower women all the way around. Elizabeth, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having
me. Yeah, thank you. Yes. Love the shirt.
So, tell us about the shirt.
The shirt says, "My vagina is magical."
It's true, and Bob experienced.
I just experienced it. And, it's and a again, magical.
Just a quick aside. I mean, this life is meant to be about this life, and as our lives are unfolding, things are happening. We want to bring that into this podcast.
Yeah.
By the way, we ran into Jen Kirkman last night, and she's listening diligently. She wants to come back and join us. Remember,
oh,
Jen?
Great! Yeah, we'll
bring her back.
Oh, great!
And I was like so surprised. She listens to everyone. I'm like, Jen, really? Great. All right, we'll keep doing
so many
things.
Podcasts to choose from, and they chose us. My daughter's middle name is Magic.
Love
after
it.
Magic Johnson
and Magic Vaginas.
We'll have to get her a t-shirt.
That's why that shirt's going to be popular.
Uh-huh.
So, Bob, why don't you walk through your experience and we can talk about sort of things that come up medically and otherwise around these experiences.
First, just let me say that Chrissy is the toughest. I couldn't do what I just witnessed last Sunday.
Bob. Unbelievable. Every woman.
It's unbelievable.
We are humble advisors. Humble observers.
How did it become a...
It's absolutely true. And let me tell you, this one, I'm pointing at my wife, uh-huh. with the triplets.
This one.
All I could do is walk behind her and go, how do you know that? How'd you do that? What do you want me to do? I clueless. And thought I understood a little pediatrics, thought I understood a little bit. No.
It's crazy what women. I don't know. What I've been questioning last week is how we became a male dominant society when that is what happens, and that is where life comes from.
Thank you. That's the whole point of the T-shirt. Literally.
Do you have any sense of that?
Yes, I do. And part of it comes from my own journey in becoming a midwife, because I always say I was a Jewish girl on the East Coast minding my own business.
You need to pull that. Thank you. That needs to go directly towards your mouth.
Like this?
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah.
So,
whereabouts? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Waterford, Connecticut. So I'm a Jewish girl from the East Coast minding my own business, mm-hmm. and I'd already become an acupuncturist, which was already like breaking the boundary barrier mm-hmm. of what I was raised as. Mm-hmm. And I was 35 years old at home minding my own business, and I started to get dreams, and the babies were being born into my hands, and I would look up and go...
Well, Susan, you bring her to your podcast.
I don't know what to do. Yeah. And they kept coming every night, and somebody said to me, well, you've received the calling to become a midwife. And I'm like, you are out of your mind.
What the hell is that?
Yeah. In my family, you go to the hospital, you get drugs... You birth a baby, the doctor does all of that, and then they wash the baby for you, give it to you, and then you put a bow on the baby and you live happily ever after. I was obviously living in a fantasy.
Was there a cigar involved in that also?
Is that about what happened, Bob? Or did it involve a guy leaping into your wife's birth canal and pulling out a baby, and then all the misery that follows? Not misery, the intensity that follows.
But it was 30 hours. I think Chrissy's on the line with us. We're going to talk about it. But it went on and on and on.
Wait. We got to finish that thought about why women ended up...
Oh, why women are not the center of the universe. Yeah.
So in my journey to becoming a midwife, I came out of the thinking that I was brought up in, which is what I see now as a patriarchal way of looking at things. And it's more linear. And becoming a midwife... I say it's all about the babies, but for me, birthing of the babies is the tip of the iceberg. I started to come into this world where the body knows what to do, mm-hmm. and there's an instinct within us, and then there's the hormones within us, and then there's how our body is made to birth a baby. I mean, the uterus grows. The intestines are pushed out of the way, and they're meant to do that. The hormones in the body work in a way to birth a baby out the vagina. And the vagina, which if you look at it, you know, it's what, 3 to 4 inches? All of a sudden expands to birth to fit a head. I mean, and the body's not like reading an instruction book or going to Lamaze class and going, oh, okay, so right now we're at where in the, we got to do, it's not linear that way.
Right.
And so when I started to understand childbirth and how the female body works, I started to look at the world completely differently.
So Kroll and I fight about this all the time. And I think that we've hit a time in history when the female biological system, which is superior to the male, is more what we need in the current culture, where we're not strictly brute force. You know, yeah. If you want to know about humans, look at primates. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's very simple. And all that you've described evolved in the primate systems. And if you just look at a chimpanzee pod, the big, fighting, aggressive, biting, nasty one controls the thing. And we're done with that now. Mm. We sort of move past that. We think, at least, we sort of past that.
We're trying.
But the point is that – and the other thing was, men had a very – We do have a much more get it done attitude, mm-hmm. and out, you know, when it comes to surviving in nature, maybe that had a slight advantage. Even the women had to tell us how to actualize it. We're just going, the get it done mm-hmm. piece mm-hmm. had a little bit of an evolutionary advantage. So in human history, aggression, get it done, those things had a slight advantage. I think those advantages are not to be found today. In fact, quite the opposite.
Right, but. I want to honor the get it done piece.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
no.
Mom goes from low risk to high risk. Thank God there's a surgical room. Yeah, thank God there's NICUs, you know, and it's about starting to use them appropriately and starting to differentiate in the birth world between low risk childbirth and high risk.
Well, in a strange way, Bob, this is analogous to what we deal with in 12-step, which saves on average about $10,000 per patient on average, mm-hmm. because you can't professionalize your way through what people need in recovery, much the way you shouldn't professionalize all the needs of obstetrical care, right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I mean, professionalize in the sense, medicalize is probably a better word, and put it in the medical system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you on that. Mm-hmm.
More to the basics rather than to the advanced physics. That's what I think.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
No.
The basics are the body does deliver the baby. Mm-hmm. We had a great birthing teacher at Kaiser on Sunset, and he kept saying all these different options. And in the end, he would always say, "But baby will come anyway."
They always do. Well, I mean, true. Look around. Yeah. We're all here.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as it gets more advanced and you know, all this fancy stuff, LA stuff, down to the brass tacks is the woman's body and the delivery
and,
of the
and
baby.
If there's a problem, there's a system. There's
right.
a backup.
Right. So there's a phrase out there that is trust birth, and I do have a challenge
I like
with
that.
But I have a challenge with it. I think birth needs to be respected. It's life or death, you know?
Mm-hmm. But for two people.
Right? But trust the process. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what's going to happen. They're like thumbprints. Each birth is unique. Each person is unique. But to trust that process and find the surrender in it, whether it is a vaginal birth at a birthing center with water and candles or a cesarean because the baby is communicating, hey, I need to get out of here. You know, and being in surrender to that process, I think, is a very adult place to be to raise a child.
Keep going through your experience. So 30 hours in, I'm sure you're very nervous.
Yeah, I just was hoping for the best. So then at a certain point, she's having massive contractions and no dilation.
Yeah. Further.
Mm-hmm. No further dilation. Yeah. So then science came in, and this wonderful doctor said, you know, we have this balloon we can put in you. And Chrissy looked at me and just like, okay. Okay, that's not, and we could keep just the two of us, just her and I, be in the room together and stuff like that. And so we did that, and that really led to the next morning when her friend, who's a midwife or just delivered babies, came, and then her mom came, and then we're pushing with a nurse at the hospital, and it's not working after 2 hours. And I think that's when I talked to you. I went outside and I said,
"Is 2 hours long enough to be start to? I'll think about alternative means, or depend on what's happening."
That's what Kaiser gives you, 2 hours.
No, I think it's appropriate to come in with questions. You know, after an hour, we're not seeing the baby descending. To come in with other suggestions, it's not a reason to go to a cesarean birth, but it's a reason to come in with suggestions.
Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm naive, man, but I know that cesareans are elective for vanity on the west side of Los Angeles.
It's true. Not vanity. So, not necessarily vanity. That's what I want to talk a little bit about.
I have thoughts on that. There's some women who have been highly traumatized, and they know for themselves they can't birth a baby out of the vagina, so they're actually making an adult decision.
Okay. And to be fair, you know, I'm an internist, so I deal with people in the later decades of life almost, you know, a lot of the time. And I would say, give or take 1%, 100% of women that age have urinary and bowel complaints. Mm-hmm. And the ones that have had vaginal deliveries have lots of complaints. Right.
And have they been followed up with perineal health and exercises?
Well, that's where we got involved with this Apex M thing and stuff like that. Obviously, this is many, many years ago that they went through their thing. But again, that's some people...
You just referred to giving birth as that thing. Giving birth, and then later on in life it causes urinary.
Yeah, and they were doing it back then in obviously a different way than it can be done, or than it was typically done now, or can be done now. And so there are some obstetricians that really invested in sort of saving that pelvic architecture as a reason for C-section. What do you think about that?
I think the answer's a lot more complex than what you're proposing, because also back then you had the mom, they were on twilight sleep. They weren't awake while they were pushing.
I know,
or they
so
had,
that's what I suspect. What was
you know,
going
they're
on?
Not feeling. So I'm
to be fair though, but to be fair though, I've been doing that for 30 years, and a lot of them were mothers at the turn of the century.
Okay.
When I was, you know, treating them.
No, but say how we were born. How were we born? I don't even know.
Oh, hospital.
I know, but were the moms unconscious?
My mom was.
Dad's in the next room. Oh, yeah.
When I asked my mom questions, I was like, how was I born? She's like, oh, Lizzie. She's like, everything was fine. You know, the water broke. I went in, you know, in the evening, and then you were born before lunch. And I'm like, did something happen
a perfect
in those
Connecticut
12
coast experience.
Hours that I might need to know about? You know?
I was born. My mother stood up on the operation table and squatted me out.
Oh my God.
She's like,
I'm in love with your mom.
Baby out.
She squatted in the middle of the hospital.
That's why I'm so perfect.
Oh. But she ended up in an ICU, though. She didn't work out so well.
And I was only 4 pounds, so...
Oh, okay, there's more to the story.
Yes, yes.
See, there's always more to the story. So, Bob, when you were talking...
Which I love that you're saying that, because medical circumstances are specific. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's the detail that determines the judgment you apply to that situation.
Right. And so, as an out-of-hospital midwife, we're looking at moms as individual. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that moms can stay safe with us and low risk is we're asking about diet. We're asking about exercise. We're getting to know who they are, how they were born. You know. Oh, so you want your mom in the room. Oh, you don't really have a good relationship with your mother. Maybe
how's that going to go?
Right. So maybe if she's in the room and you're not the mother of your child, but you're the daughter of your mother and you turn 8, the 8-year-old's not going to birth a baby out the vagina. Right. So maybe you'd like to make a different decision. And they look at me and they're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, so those are the conversations we're having with the individuals.
Here's for me, just a quick aside. That those kinds of conversations go down on, see, the patient was given a philosophy and responded. I'm saying, that patient had a relationship with somebody who had a point of view that impinged on her system, that created a new reality in your relationship with her, in which you together derived a new outcome.
Right.
Right? So, because people always go, the father of positive psychology, I heard him talking the other day, and he was saying, oh, my daughter came up to me, long story short, when she was 5 and said, I've decided not to be crabby anymore. And daddy, if I can be not crabby, you can certainly be not so curmudgeonly, not so nasty anymore. And he thought, yeah, why can't I? And he left out the part that it was the relationship with the daughter that created that change, that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she had an idea, but it was the relationship that created the aha.
Anyway,
you were trying to say something.
Yeah, no. Relationship is a key part of what we do, relationship connection. And then we can bring it back to the brain, and we can bring it back to neuroscience.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about in this relationship, we're creating trust.
All right, we'll take a little break. I'm here with Elizabeth Bochner. She is a midwife. What's your sort of shorthand description of how you like to be referred to?
I'm a licensed midwife with a medical board license.
Okay, licensed midwife with a medical board license. We'll be right back after this.
I'd like to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, Allo Recovery Centers. I know we can trust it because I started it and I work there.
I can vouch for that.
But the fact is, it's the way we used to do things.
You and I?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, basic Minnesota model, really strong boundaries with clients, individualized treatment plans.
Absence-based.
Yeah,
great
yeah.
team.
It's a great team, been there a long time. Some Good. Of the people have been there since the beginning. But here's the other thing, is millennials need to learn how to get their driver's license and get a job, and we're starting a coffee house where the kids are going to work.
Great.
You know, that type of stuff. So it's like the best of the 20th century and a new 21st century model.
Which is social employment rehab,
growing up,
vocational rehab,
personal responsibility
in the world, being in the world,
yeah,
and recovery,
yeah, long term.
Well, we have Christy on the line.
My
now,
life
Bob.
Partner.
Welcome,
where we
Chrissy.
Call people these days.
Mom,
life partner,
mom of magic.
That's nice. I like that.
With a magic,
yeah,
with a magical vagina.
With JJ,
yeah, so how more you magical than I ever imagined.
I love hearing that. Love it.
Isn't that awesome that somebody can be sort of startled at their own body?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was an amazing thing.
How
I
are
started
you
crying.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm not bad, considering.
So tell us about the experience from your perspective, 30 hours of pushing. We have Elizabeth here. She's a midwife with a medical board license.
Hi.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to hear your story.
Yeah. It's crazy because it feels like it lasted maybe 2 minutes looking back, and it really was like a day and a half.
Well, that's Mother Nature being kind to you. No, really,
yeah.
That's good.
So, it was unexpected, and I ended up doing things that I didn't think I could.
Like
the last push. I'm sure Bob talked about. Has he talked about it?
Only from the working end. What was it like from the head?
I don't even know where to start. Where do I start? How much do you guys know?
When I talked up until when the first suction thing popped off.
Christy, I have a question for you. Were you medicated or unmedicated? Did you have an epidural?
I had the epidural, but for the first 2 hours, I'd say I couldn't feel anything. Like I couldn't feel the pushing, so I don't think I was doing what I was supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they turned down the epidural.
And how was that for you?
I mean, I was happy because I felt like I was finally doing what I was finally pushing.
Great.
Interesting,
you know,
right?
I finally had control of my body, so it hurt, but mm-hmm. it was better than feeling like I was getting nowhere.
Mm-hmm. How was it when they suggested the suction device?
The vacuum?
The vacuum. What did
I mean,
you think?
At first it's a little scary to hear vacuum, right?
Yeah. I'd be scared of it.
I didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It took a couple times of the doctor coming in and mentioning it, and I knew that after all the hours of pushing, I didn't want to do the cesarean necessarily if I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'd give the vacuum a try, and luckily it worked out. So
great. Do you know if what baby position baby was in when baby was born? Like looking straight up or looking down?
Looking down, I think. Right.
Yeah, okay. Down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I saw the back of her head.
What does that mean? What's the difference?
Well, what is that?
I was asking about baby's position because one thing that we know as midwives is we're always looking at what position baby is in relationship to the pelvis. And when the chin is tucked to the chest, it's more efficient for the baby to come. And I'm not saying right or wrong. It just makes more of an efficient labor. And there's sometimes where a mom might have challenges pushing because the head's coming in at the side or the baby's looking straight up. And it creates a situation that's not as effective or efficient.
The shoulders can get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say I was watching for the first time ever and the baby's head was coming out and then going back in.
That's normal.
It was crazy.
That's the body.
That's the crowning thing.
But here's the beauty of that is that it comes out, it comes under the pubic bone, and it stretches the perineum, and then it goes back. So that is nature working so that it doesn't tear as much. It's a beautiful process.
Wow.
It's kind of like anal sex.
Oh, wow.
It was like 4 hours of that.
What,
4 hours of
what
that
is
going out going
with
back.
Your mind? I didn't even want to say brain.
Did you hear what Susan just said, Chrissy?
Yeah. Yes, I did. I'm ignoring it.
Is Mike Catherwood sending you messages or something?
Okay, sorry.
So I just want to say, I was listening to a wonderful podcast with Sex with Emily talking about the anal sex, and it informed me as a midwife, because I was like, oh, the inner sphincter needs to be relaxed for the baby to come down.
I'm friends with her. What can I say? I listen to her.
Thank her for me.
We'll get Emily in here next.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So she wanted to come today, actually.
So can you, I want to go back in the day, because it was all day long that she was having contractions, like very painful, painful contractions. On the way to the hospital, I thought we were going to have the baby in the car. Mm-hmm. Men need to, we need to all communicate better what's going on.
So one of the things that I teach with our families is we try to have them have a safe word. Because there are words that will come out of mom's mouth like, I don't want to do this. Yeah. Get me an epidural. Yeah. And what it translates into is get me a new position. Yeah. Tell me you love me. Tell me I'm doing a good job. Get me into the shower. So when you have a safe word, though, it's a word somebody would never say in a zillion years. And that word, mom can use in an empowered way to say, I am no longer just in pain. I'm now suffering. And it's an empowered choice for me to have that epidural.
What I'm wondering, but this is before we got to the hospital. I think there's a lot of dropping and things are happening that women don't understand what's happening in the car. Remember, Chrissy, when you just screamed in the contraction? What do you think that was?
I don't know.
Well, one of the things, this is a myth that birth is just, labor's just linear. It's like, oh, the mom goes from 0 to 4 to 6 to 10 centimeters, and then we have a baby. And it's like, no. We got the baby turning left and right. It's coming down. It's coming back up. There's effacement going on. There's dilation. It's like a beautiful clock. And everything just kind of comes together. And then you got the hormones in the body, and everything moves out of the way. The pelvis starts to move. The sacrum starts to move out of the way. Maybe you felt that in the car, Chrissy, do you think?
Yeah. Sounds like it.
It was, I can tell you, I was there for every contraction. I didn't leave, not for 1 second, like all guys should not. The one in the car seemed like the most painful, except for the last two pushes.
Is that true? Chrissy, was that accurate?
It was pretty painful before I got the epidural. I would say that was the most painful. The 20 minutes before the epidural.
That's the hardest, usually.
I think most people would wonder what percentage of your births are sort of concluded in the manner which everyone anticipates.
80%. Yeah. 80% at our birthing center and home birth practice. And the ones that are cesarean tend to be for physiological reasons. You know,
something's wrong.
Is the body and the baby are saying we need to come out by cesarean. Like, there's no soft spot on the baby's head. So how's the baby going to fit if there's no soft spot and it can't mold? It's not mom's a bad girl. You know, there's something going on, and we're grateful for the hospital.
Yeah.
And now you were complaining, Bob, a little bit about the aftercare.
That's the thing that I think a lot of communication does. We're a breastfeeding nation now. All the institutions believe in breastfeeding. I don't know.
But they've got a little punitive with it, haven't they? Didn't somebody tell me this? Somebody said they felt diminished because the breastfeeding team came in and they were aggressive and they were a little bit...
Oh, you can't leave the hospital unless they give you the thumbs up.
No, I understand, but they were not just aggressive, but then the mom felt diminished by only going for a week.
That's part of the patriarchal issue that we were talking about
at
the beginning.
I know it's female...
But it's that mindset.
Yeah.
And my perspective of a hospital environment, and you can correct me, Dr. Drew, is that there's protocols in place, and so people aren't really allowed to look at the individual in front of them,
it's military and financial.
Yes, I mean,
it's legal, military, financial.
Right,
those are the systems.
So
that structured.
So and then they're overworked.
I used to yell at you about that. Remember, Bob?
Yeah,
I used to go, it's a military system.
I'm not really military.
I said, don't screw with the nurses. The nurses are trained like military.
Right. So you know, you've got these wonderful people who have gotten into a profession that have been systematically. Been shown, you know, you do it this way, do the numbers, do the paperwork.
It's all about numbers and patient satisfaction and
But, you know, I coach people when I talk to them, and when they go into a hospital, it's like, it's very few doctors who become OBs because they hate women. Yes, there's some misogynists out there, but
historically there was a little bit.
What was that?
There was historically a little bit of
right,
that.
Right,
but now it's not.
I mean, who the hell's going to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning you know, for
they
how
hate
many
a
years, right?
They hate babies.
Or they hate babies, or they yeah. hate birth itself, or the yeah. process. But they're getting overworked. Insurance is running the industry right yes. now, and they have to do more and more and more births, and they have less and less time to do the kind of care which creates healthy family systems.
Well, but our doctors, the doctors we had were great.
Yes, you're at a wonderful hospital. That
they were amazing.
Great.
They were amazing. And then came the next day and the follow-up care and the birth weight drop mm-hmm. and jumping through all the hoops of any system. I don't want to criticize Kaiser. I'm sure it's at
so,
every
so
system.
So what percentage drop is normal of weight?
10%.
Right.
All babies drop 10%. The
well, they
public
should.
Needs
they,
to they, know that.
Well,
you think your kid's dying.
Well, I can't speak to all the public, but I know at our center, everyone gets breastfeeding classes included, and they learn this before the baby comes, because we're helping them not just birth babies, but helping them become great parents and who
you,
know this.
You may have actually been given that information, but as you know, you're getting a lot of information. We retain only 20% at a time under the best of circumstances. So they need to maybe some feedback to that group and say, hey, repeat that every day.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Breastfeeding is so underrated. I mean, they don't tell you how hard it is.
I mentioned how hard it was on Teen Mom, and La Leche attacked me. How
who's,
dare
who's,
you for being
La Leche?
La Leche is a... How would you describe it? You know what La
Leche
is?
League is a nonprofit group that supports women to breastfeed, and they have wonderful groups
are
that get together for free.
This, let me stop right there. Are there people against breastfeeding?
No.
My
no
father?
One's against.
Really?
No,
really?
It's just really hard. I mean, no, he's not now. Yeah. But the stories growing up
yeah,
were,
yeah.
oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
oh, really?
Yep.
Well,
and then it was also, we yeah. loved you so much, we're giving you formula because the doctor says it's better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Late
well,
60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's not now.
No, now
no,
there's...
Everybody's
now.
Very pro-breastfeeding, and I think that people, guys, need to be informed to help their gals to not feel guilty or
right,
all this kind of stuff
easy
that's come
as,
up this week.
Mm-hmm. It's not as easy as you might... as your fantasy imagines, and it's a lot of work.
The word fantasy is really important mm-hmm. That you're mentioning, because so many people have fantasy about what the birth is supposed to look like, and if it doesn't look like their fantasy, they failed. Same thing with the breastfeeding, and what is, I think, a solution to this is community support.
That's
you know,
what
and
I
honest
we would
conversations.
Do. Yeah, about this.
That's what La Leche League does offer, and that's where you can find...
Ask them not to attack people that are just... discussing topics. They may attack us today for just discussing that breastfeeding is nuanced.
It's very, very nuanced, and every woman is individual, and no one should feel shamed if that's something they are unable to do. And the other thing, and I am going to go on a limb and say this, is that if you have a brand new mom who is completely sleep deprived and she's starting to think she's going mentally insane and will never come back from the edge... there's nothing wrong with her getting a good 4 hours of sleep and then coming back and revisiting with more support, because the brain, I mean,
oh,
we all know.
Imagine she tried to breastfeed triplets.
Right, yeah.
That's I couldn't do it.
It's yeah. insane.
But
you,
I mean.
It's just not physically possible.
Right. Especially with the sleep deprivation
yeah,
going
oh,
especially.
On. Especially.
Right. So we need support.
It's already there.
So let Chrissy describe when the doctor told us. Will you describe when he told you? Like, it was a very patriarchal thing. Say mm-hmm. what the doctor told us.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
He said, I can see the guilt in your eye.
Well, yeah. He took a couple minutes, and he was doing some calculations on the computer, and he said, give me a minute. I'll explain this later. And then he goes, oh. He made some kind of sigh, like, oh, that's no good.
Oy.
And it was
that
like...
That doesn't help.
And
it's our first follow-up visit.
She lost 10%, right?
Oh, that doesn't. Yeah, it's normal, but the wording is going to send a mom into a different space.
But continue right. though. It got worse. Go, Chrissy.
Yeah, and then he starts talking about how we need to introduce formula to her, and he looked at me and he goes, you know, I can see there's guilt in your eyes. And
there was no guilt in her eyes.
She was relieved. Was that relief? Was that guilt? Well, most women.
Well, no, I wasn't happy.
Well,
he didn't make it like a. I don't know. It wasn't like he made me feel like I was doing something wrong.
That's guilt.
When I know that wasn't.
That's guilt, mm-hmm. though. That's guilt.
Mm-hmm. It was guilt. Yeah. Yeah, it was guilt and all that, and I don't know. I just feel like it could have been done in a softer way.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm sure he would evaluate himself and say the same thing. You know what yeah. I mean? I mean, mm-hmm. she was probably busy and whatever. And,
yeah, exactly. And, doing 100 things. Yeah, and so are you currently exclusively breastfeeding right now, or are you doing a little of each?
We did formula for a few days, and then we went to the second appointment, and they mentioned I could subside with breast milk if I was pumping. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing that. And it's been good.
And then you go back to breastfeeding? Is that?
I always feel the babies know where the love is and they go back. Now, my question is to you, is it a breast issue or is it like a mouth issue on your baby? Does your baby have tongue tie or lip tie going on? Has anyone talked to you about that?
No, they said that she's great. She has like a great sucking reflex.
Great.
And I feel like I'm producing more now.
Great.
So maybe in a production thing, mm-hmm. the short term. Mm-hmm.
No, they said it was gorged, though, and then they had me push it down.
What?
Oh, she was clogged.
What is it, Chrissy?
Yeah.
She was not.
Yeah, okay.
What you guys call it?
Mm-hmm. A plugged duck.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so I push it down because here's another thing about nature. So they're telling her she's got to breastfeed and push her breast down. Mm-hmm. You don't have enough hands to do that.
Right.
So somebody else has to do it.
Well, that's also where the pillows come in.
But it's also
the only
where,
time I felt purposeful.
Hang on, but there's a really important point to be made here, which is the other piece you had had suggested or brought up, which was this is really a pre and post natal experience.
Exactly. Yeah. So one of the differences with out of hospital midwifery care is that once the baby's born, we're treating the mother child dyad. We're doing a home visit at the house. How's it going? How are you feeling? How's baby? How's breastfeeding? Every day we're making a phone call to check in to see how it's going.
And does insurance cover your services or no?
Oh, that's part of the problem. It would cost insurance less money to have us if everyone who was low risk knew we were a choice. But because they don't, we have to fight tooth and nail.
Doesn't this sound familiar?
I mean, we could do a whole like 10-day podcast retreat on this.
This is the stuff we fight in our addiction field because we're like we know what they need.
Wait, is there something even more systemically wrong? I said after two visits back and forth, and they wanted us at 8:30 in the morning in Hollywood when we live in Claremont. Oh. We can't do that. It'll be a 2-hour drive.
Jesus. Right.
And so I said, listen, can we just pay cash to a lactation coach? The nurse said, I don't know.
Well, you know what's interesting? It's funny you would be talking about that. Listen,
yes.
Bob. Wait.
How crazy is that?
Bob, I had this is years ago now, probably 20 years ago. I had this super wealthy woman who was fearful of Medicare. She just didn't want to be a part of Medicare. She was 80 years old. She could pay cash for everything, and she just didn't want to have any encumbrances on her care in a system.
Yeah.
Could not be admitted to a hospital. You could not. They didn't have a system to manage a cash-paying patient. Right. You literally couldn't be admitted because they don't know what to do, and they had no way to do it.
That's what we just bumped into.
She could come in with
just wanted someone like you to come to our house.
Right, that's part of the care. So you have to pay for it. Insurance will kind of cover it. We're out of network, but listen. 24 hours later, we're in your home.
But we were trapped in Kaiser bureaucracy, which we had to go to those visits to show weight sustainable.
But do you remember what the doctor said when you brought up bringing money? He said, no, don't waste your money on that.
What?
So that is not practicing medicine. Or
he said,
that's
don't
an opinion.
Waste your money.
That's an opinion and not medicine.
But we couldn't why we didn't do it is because we were still going to have to go to their appointments because we were now in 11% weight loss. We had to jump through their hoops.
Bob, how many times on this podcast and anywhere people will listen to me have I said bureaucracy is the great evil of our time?
It really was.
Bureaucracy
crazy.
Is the problem.
Are you trying to tell me you didn't have the right contacts? That someone couldn't just say, I got the name of a lactation consultant who will come to your home?
Well, now you do.
Now we do.
I'm here for you. Yeah, no. And they'll spend lactation consultants will spend time with you.
You can then stretch out your visits. There's ways to diminish the frequency of those visits if you have a professional calling a professional and saying,
We have one tomorrow. Here. I'm going to put little weights around Sydney's body.
You're chewing more gum than usual. Are you okay?
No. I got it. It's two at a time. No, but I'm trying to figure out how to like soak her in water before we go there. Because if she doesn't go up, we're going to be every 48 hours.
No, you're going to get a lactation specialist.
We'll get a lactation consultant to come to your house.
Are there men in your field?
Yeah, I don't know of any male lactation consultants, know about male midwives. Midwife means...
Probably a good idea, right? In terms of making the overall shift.
Yeah. It's midwife means with women. Yeah. And there's a wonderful male doula in town who's awesome. And he
What's the difference between a doula and a midwife?
A doula is the emotional support and the physical comfort. And a midwife is in charge of the health and well-being of the mom and baby.
The care. Mm-hmm. Do you sometimes use both?
Yes.
Some people use both?
Absolutely. Back in the day, and maybe outside of Los Angeles, you needed a doula to advocate for you. But in Los Angeles, we've got wonderful hospitals and wonderful doctors. And so they're doing a lot more of just the emotional support and physical comfort.
I would argue that doula with you particularly might complicate things because you are so invested in the connection. Having another person there would be like,
yes and no, because we have to manage the correct expectations. So if I'm in charge of the health and well-being of the baby,
let me just get technical.
You can help them accept. You can help them accept.
No, not only that, but I have to be awake when that baby's coming out of the vagina in case I need to, you know, give some shots to stop bleeding or to resuscitate a baby. So I can't be up for 3 days straight. So if they need someone to support them in that way beforehand, they need a doula.
So in the system we just went through, you would have replaced the birthing nurse, right? You would have been there with just me and her pushing?
What?
No.
Wait, what are you asking?
I'm trying to find out how you can hire somebody and control more of your birth
in the
hospital.
Birth experience. Okay. So a doula, just to let you know, to be clear, in the emotional support and physical comfort, they cannot tell the medical professional what to do.
But the midwife can?
If there's a midwife, she has to have privileges in the hospital. And the hospital But the hospital that you were at does have midwives on call and available.
But it's more of a collaborative effort than right?
Yeah, the hospital care is great care and great women, but it's different because they have hospital protocols.
Yes.
Whereas
yes.
we're out of hospital midwives.
Do you practice mostly? What hospitals?
I don't practice in a hospital as a midwife. Oh. I have an accredited birthing center in Silver Lake, Graceful.
Where
is Graceful Birthing. We were at dinner with somebody that went to your center last night.
Oh, really?
Did you deliver a baby last night?
I didn't. My midwives did.
Yeah.
We had a wow.
They came from the party, right?
I don't know the details yet. I just know I had to.
That was at our table. They went to. I was talking to Kristen Shaw. You know Kristen, and and she said, "No, they're going to Silver Lake." Then she mentioned the midwife center.
Oh, we were fabulous. At Chris
Hardwick's wedding.
Where is it? Across from Pacific Dining Center? Car?
We're right by Gobi Restaurant, and it's right across from that fabulous place with coffee and egg croissants. that's been around forever, and they've got meetings in the back.
Oh, tropical.
Yeah, right across from there.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. So there's also
all
one,
about the food in Silver Lake.
There's also one in the medical building across from Pacific Dining Car. That's where my friend's daughter was born. They have swimming pools there. They have all kinds of things.
Good Sam or something.
Swimming pools. So let's just clarify that. They're called birth pools. They're not huge swimming pools that they birth in. And the
there's Sydney right there.
Hi, Sydney.
Meeting time.
Get at it.
Sydney, we're talking about your
multitasking
birth.
Over here.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what most West women that are engaged in the breastfeeding by this stage can maintain it for many months on average. Yeah.
Yeah. Once it's my experience that mostly when women are in the flow of it and it's working, it just keeps going.
And that an average we're recommending 2 years? Is that sort of recommended?
We don't. Our moms love to breastfeed. So we don't have to spend a lot of time really recommending it. And I think, who is currently recommending 2 years, I think? Or is it 1 year?
Pediatrics, I think.
Okay. So one of the reasons
again,
I don't know.
You know, OB and Ps are out of my range, but I do kind of keep an eye on it. So I think that's true.
Yeah. And so an interesting story, the midwife Jocelyn, who's at our center, the two of us went to Haiti to work for a while. Mm. And all the moms there, as soon as they give birth, they're using formula. Because there's this mentality that, if you are of high, wealthy status.
That used to be here, too. Same thing.
Right? So we walked around going, no. All the wealthy moms are, breastfeeding until the babies are, 3 and 4. That's what they're doing now.
And to be fair, the really wealthy moms are breastfeeding until, 8 or 9. Or something strange things. But whatever. Right. Whatever you're into, every case individual. Mm-hmm. How about the water births? Where are we at with that?
Talk to me about what your questions are.
Well, talk about doing something that God didn't intend. You know what I mean? It's,
well,
I'm just saying. I'm sure there are cultures where it's happened, but it's and I understand the philosophy and the idea behind it, but I don't know. And the baby's going to come out of the water anyway.
So the baby is living in water.
Yeah.
Amniotic fluid, what's on the inside.
Yeah.
And in case people listening don't know this, the baby's actually getting oxygen from the umbilical cord, from the placenta.
Yeah.
So, Bob, did you learn this? What color is baby when the baby's on the inside? Is it pink or blue?
I don't know.
What color do you think baby is?
Chrissy, do you know?
I want to say blue. I don't know.
Correct. Baby's blue because baby's getting oxygen from that umbilical cord. So the baby's not actually breathing air.
So what's going through its nose and mouth?
Nothing.
It's drinking the amniotic
fluid. Yeah, it sort of swallows fluid and stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like that? You don't want to drink some amniotic fluid? Did you eat the placenta? How about, let's get into that. Catherine ate the placenta for quite some time afterwards,
So then the baby's being born into the water. The baby's not breathing in its warm water because the baby's taking a breath when it hits that colder air.
Yeah.
Okay?
And so...
And the baby's not swimming in the water.
Right. It's just sort of in it. Mm-hmm. And now we're pushing them into a... pool, and we're keeping everything attached.
And we're keeping everything clean. You know, if you're filling it up, you're not using the garden hose. You know, you're using a hose that's never been used before.
I cannot articulate why I'm uncomfortable with the water birth thing.
I feels, can respect that.
It just feels contrived or unnatural or something that, you know, it's sort of invented by us to make us feel good. You know what I mean?
I can understand it from the anthropological point of view.
I'm just sort
I
of
hear you.
Looking at it that way. I don't know. And I may be totally wrong. There's always better. You know what I mean? Maybe it's better.
Well, then there's the hundreds of moms who are in labor and transitioning, and we get them into the warm water, and they just go, oh, my God, thank you. And it shifts everything for them, and they start to relax with the warm water. And when a mom relaxes, all the muscles down there are relaxing. That inner sphincter, the perineum.
I can't argue with that part.
Right?
That part sounds good.
Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden, and it's not overwhelming them as much. Yeah. And they're not as overwhelmed, and they feel a little more in control.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's those aspects, but I hear you.
All right. So there's that. And eating the placenta? Where are you with that?
So I was trained as
How dare you laugh?
We've talked about it. Chrissy talked about it.
Chrissy, did you have your placenta prepared?
Yes, over
it.
Easy.
I left it up to the doctors.
You left it up to the doctors.
They had a frying pan right there on the side, Bob.
It was sitting there for a long time.
I've been with that one family.
It was a big one.
It was a big one, and it was sitting there for a long time.
Beautiful, healthy, and juicy.
Once you have this
yum.
No, but let me tell
you. She had three of them.
Could have had a barbecue.
She had 25 pounds of placenta.
Oh, my God.
We could have fed a small village.
And how many pounds of baby did you have?
25 pounds.
No, 17 pounds of baby.
Yeah, it took 3 pounds of fluid or something.
Right? So here's, I come from the point of view of an acupuncturist, because I was trained as an acupuncturist and herbalist, of the medicine in it, and that is to be steamed with different herbs, and they have different energetic components. And that's how I was trained, and then
it's certainly
you're
unique
dehydrating
biology.
It.
It's placenta is probably one of the most unique organs that nature has ever created. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a unbelievable factory.
Isn't it amazing?
Yes, it's unbelievable.
It's like magical. Our bodies can make it, right?
No,
what?
Our bodies can't.
No, your bodies can't. But I use the word vagina as to encompass everything, but it's like magical, right? I'm that person, when I drive over bridges, I'm always like, who thought of putting something a car can go on over water, and how did they do that, right?
Started with men. Men typically do that.
Right. No. Give full credit. They can think about that stuff, and they can think about the surgeries and how to do that, but our bodies just do it without even thinking.
Well, let me tell you something about the placenta.
So talk to me.
When you have this intense, and Chrissy, she explained that the reason why they brought all the scalpels and everything, it wasn't that the C-section would be done in that room, but if something went wrong, they would do it.
Well, that's one possibility. The other is the episiotomy, which is slitting the perineum.
Right. So I don't. I wasn't.
There was
a lot
of tools, and there was 12 staff members in there.
That's a lot.
It was crazy.
That's a lot.
It's more like preparing for a crash, I think.
Yeah. So
some of them may be in the pediatric staff too.
Yeah, they were. They
I
were.
Think so.
Yeah,
they were.
So what I do know about hospitals is that they have protocols in case there is an emergency. It's not necessarily that there was one, and the room can get heightened with a lot of adrenaline
because
nobody
then,
knows.
So get what happens. So then. the baby comes out magically. That doctor, just a magician himself, too, with
her vagina.
With a vagina.
Right.
You need a magician with the magic. Mm-hmm. He was amazing.
That's funny.
What he did. And so then, but
the magician to handle the magic.
Oh, my God.
This guy, I swear to God, this guy was amazing. So anyways, so the baby, and I have an older son who was very bloodied and whatever mm-hmm. when he came out, but Sydney was very clean. I walked right over and she was very clean. It was very, and so everybody was so focused on Sydney and then of course Chrissy, that this placenta just sat there in this bucket on the table where all the scalpels were. So, and we walked past it over and over again, and I was thinking, I really did think, like, that thing was doing magical work, right? Like for fucking months.
Uh-huh.
And now it's just sitting there and nobody cares about it.
Right. So
That's interesting.
So there are some traditions where they will actually honor the magic of that placenta and they bury it outside in the yard in ceremony.
Wow.
And they put a rose bush on
top of it. LA County, that's almost impossible.
However, it makes good sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
That makes more sense than eating it. So, yeah. But who knows? Eating is still, that's still discussed.
But isn't there really so much to investigate in there, and so much that medical schools could use, or no? They know everything about it.
Well, this is the issue more about, I think you're asking what you end up going
I want to know what happened to it, because now that we're talking about
that's the big question. Are they using it and, I don't know, selling it because there's so much fabulous stem cells in there?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, and that's where I was going to go. That's kind of where your question goes, is to cord blood and stem cells, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we doing with it?
Yeah.
No, what are they doing?
I don't know.
Most of them, they're not doing
anything
with.
There were 16 of them over last weekend at Kaiser Hollywood.
I'm sure you were offered to save cord blood, right? Did you go through that whole process?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we at that? Where do you feel about that?
Where do I feel about that? I think that we've made a lot of great discoveries. Yeah. And the one thing they don't talk about, though, is the benefits of banking the blood in the baby. So what about having the blood being allowed to keep pulsing into baby with all the nutrients and all those stem cells and it being there as the baby grows older? There's also ways of getting stem cells out of other places in the body, too, that nobody talks about.
No, we do. We do.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, okay. But it's a little
gets into
more
religion.
It's more cumbersome, too. No, but my thing with stem cells, why not? You know, why,
because it's not what God intended.
Well, why not?
I don't care.
No, but why not bank it in the baby? No,
but I'm stem cells don't remain stem cells very long unless you hold them.
Yeah, that's
they,
what.
They move into other things.
I'm in the cord blood registry, right? My idea is also kind of expensive. But my idea is 20 years from now.
I would argue both sounds good to me, mm-hmm. by the way. I do both. I mean, there's a lot of stem cells. Okay.
But anyways, the idea is that in my mind, they can create livers 25 years from now, and I need one. And I can just say, I know where to get them. I know where to get them. No? Is that crazy?
It's not crazy because liver is the most sort of.
It's the one I'm most. It's the organ I'm most concerned with.
We're going towards Gattaca.
Hang on a second. Why don't we go protect your liver and take one of the treatments that
I'm with Drew.
Because I, Chrissy, tell her about this. Tell them about the Kaiser situation.
Oh,
they
boy.
Want, you know the
there's
right
so many hoops to jump through.
I don't care. Why not? Let's do it.
I'm not a good hoop jumper, Drew. Yeah,
I'm not either. I hate bureaucracy. You know that.
Why don't we nourish your liver with some herbs?
I take good care.
He has a virus there that can be cured. Although you're you're type 1? Do you know type 1?
Yeah, type 1A. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And that's
the most curable.
Yes, and easily so.
It's $120,000.
They're not going to charge?
Well, I got to get through some hoops.
Wait, you don't have to do that fancy one. There's an interval.
Oh, no, I'm not going to be sick every day for 6 months.
All right. Susan, give me the wrap it up.
We got to take a break.
Wait a minute, I have a question for Chrissy. Chrissy, how do you feel about the birth of your child?
How do I feel about it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm actually pretty happy with it.
Fabulous.
It was nothing that I expected
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back, I wouldn't have changed anything, really.
That's beautiful to hear.
Yeah,
I'm glad you had a great experience. I think that's mm-hmm. what also helps people be connected parents as they start to bring up their child.
Mm-hmm. And as I was in pain, my mom looked at me and said, you want to have another one? And mm-hmm. I was thinking, now, why not? I know I can do it.
That's great to hear.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great.
It's magical in all respects. And women are magical. Their vaginas are magical. The relationship with the baby is magical.
Oh, Dr. Dre, you made me very happy right now.
Those are good words for this.
And how about this? So she's named after Magic Johnson, the middle name, because that's Chrissy's favorite guy, right? Mm. Magic Johnson's birthday is August 14th, same day Sid's born.
Nice. Well
love
done.
It.
How great is that?
Mm-hmm.
This is the domain of my wife, Susan with all the other sort of unexplainables.
No,
yes. All right. No, so let me, we didn't get deep into our friends at Bergamet, speaking of the liver, but I want to remind people about them. Bergamet Mega Plus, nutritional supplement, take it twice a day. It's a natural HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. It's what a statin essentially is, but it's a natural version of that. Yeah, it's something to help lower cholesterol, reduce insulin resistance, and it's shown to have some sort of remarkable results with fatty liver. It's a polyphenol. It's very rich in polyphenol. It's from the bergamot fruit. And, you know, talk to your doctor about this. Do not do anything. I'm not necessarily saying do this on my recommendation. Talk to your doctor about it. And when you buy two bottles, you get one free. Learn more at bergametna.com. That is bergamet, bergametna.com. And click through on the Bergamet Manor on our website. Elizabeth, this was fun.
Oh, I had a great time.
We could do a little mini-series on this because it's a huge, huge topic, obviously.
Love it.
And maybe what we ought to do...
Well, I want to have her back as a child psychologist because
I
want to know
that's exactly
about...
That's what I was thinking.
I'm watching all across Los Angeles madness raising children. Yeah. And
oh,
I want your take on so much of it. Will you come back?
Absolutely. I would love to. I have an opinion.
She's
There's too much attachment.
Well... It's the wrong kind of attachment, let's say.
Yes. We need more adults having healthy attachment with children. How's that for an answer?
Okay. Right,
yeah,
Bob?
I'm always too harsh, but I just...
No.
I also have
said.
A five-year-old, and I'm living in that world, and it's
Bob,
just madness.
Hang on. Listen to what you said. Complete, whole adults.
Adults.
There are very few in Los
thank
Angeles.
Thank you. Attaching, and people don't really
healthy
know what that
attachment.
Means. Healthy attachment to another human... We call a baby a child, and we can get into the details. Dan Siegel is one of my friends and heroes, and
I
Alan
love
Shore
him.
And all these guys. They're all fantastic. And so she's a disciple of all that, so that's why we resonate so profoundly.
Come back and we'll talk about that.
Fabulous.
Done and done, everybody. Thank you very much. We'll
thank
see you next
you
time.
Thank you very much.
I'm just saying, you really are so special.
I'm actually open for this week, pretty open.
Especially to me. I'm just saying, you really are so special. Special. Especially to me. I'm just saying, you really are so special. Special, especially to me. I'm just saying, you really are so special.
You really are so
special, especially to me. I'm just saying, you really are so special. Special. Special thing to me. I'm just saying, you really are so special. Special. Especially to me. I'm just saying, you really are so special. Special. Especially to me. I'm just saying, you really are so special. Special. Especially to me. I'm just saying, you really are so special. Special. Especially to me.